Welcome to the Look Far podcast, Voices from the Wild. Join Look Far Conservation as we talk to conservation leaders from around the world about their work, their life, the challenges they face, and the successes they've had.
On today's podcast, we talk to Wayne Collin. He's the co-founder and executive director of Fundación Los Aliados in Ecuador. We'll be talking about how Los Aliados has been supporting indigenous and local communities to transition to more regenerative agricultural practices, but they also address the whole supply chain. So anything from creating cooperatives or building a processing facility to connecting the farmers with premium buyers for the products. Together with 11 indigenous and local community organizations, they just launched the Center for Bioeconomy, spearheading an innovative investment hub in the Ecuadorian Amazon to scale resilient community-led businesses. Aliados describes their work as addressing four pillars: regenerative agriculture, bioeconomy incubator, responsible markets, and creating ecological value. We'll be discussing all these elements in more detail with Wayne.
Wayne, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
Great you could be here. And also joined, as always, by Marlies.
Hi, everyone. Good to see you, Wayne.
Hey, Marlies. Great to see you.
And Lucia.
Hi, Scott. Hi, everyone. Good to be here.
Well, let's get started. Wayne, Los Aliados, tell us what's been going on.
Yeah, so lots been going on. And I'll dive right in. I mean, we've been going for nearly 15 years as an organization, founded in 2009. Last week was actually a really big week for us. Up until now, we've been working on a set of value chains, a set of different products with different communities, starting with Wayusa in the Amazon. Then we moved to the Andes. We've been working with Goldenberry, moved into the Chocó forest. We've been working with cacao. But all of our work up until now has been with individual communities, with separate products. And the work has been great. But in a new project with support from the IDB lab and others, we're consolidating our work. We're bringing it all together and going to be working at the landscape level. So last week in the Amazon, we came together with 11 indigenous and local organizations and launched the Aliados Center for Innovation and Investment in the Amazon. So I'm very excited about that. The workshop was fantastic, and it's a fundamental pivot for us because it's really difficult to build businesses in the rural Amazon ecosystem. As you can imagine, it's difficult to build a business anywhere, and it's just difficult to work there. So what we're doing is we bring together a network, a cross-section of diverse partners who are all living in the same landscape, all looking to build bioeconomy ventures, but they all need support. Some of them need finance, some of them need capacity building, some of them need connection to markets. And this is what the center, the Aliados Center, which is what we're starting to call it, is going to do. It brings together a diverse network of actors, and we support them with specialized technical assistance for maybe things that they can't afford, be that regenerative agriculture inputs, or be that machinery or equipment, or be that specialized consulting support. And then in a new development for us, we also support them with a set of financial mechanisms.
So before we dive in, you mentioned you're working to build a bioeconomy. Could you explain the term bioeconomy and bioeconomy ventures?
Bioeconomy is an in-fashion term at the moment. And what it refers to is generally, this is not a formal definition, but it's a business or a company which has triple bottom line goals. So it aims to be economically viable, but also generate environmental benefits for ecology and society. I think it's mainly focused, at least for our work, with communities that are living in vulnerable and important ecosystems, where business to date is not showing to provide benefits for the environment or for local people. Agriculture is the main driver of deforestation in the Amazon. And at the same time, the world needs more food. So this is not a healthy tendency for the Amazon. So bioeconomy aims to change the way business is done in the Amazon, helping to reduce poverty levels poverty is a problem with many communities that live in these remote ecosystems by creating new value for the biodiversity that's found there and linking it to a business model. That's the challenge.
Would that be then the basis? Like you said, agriculture is the main driver of deforestation, but you're implementing regenerative agriculture or agroforestry systems. So I imagine that's then one, that's part of a bioeconomy venture.
That's where we start. I first started working with ecotourism like 20 years ago, and ecotourism is great and has benefits. But the more I worked in the Amazon and with rural communities, you see that they're all farmers. For generations, they've been working the land, and they have a very ecologically sustainable agroforestry system called the chakra. It's the smallholder farming system. Every family has a chakra. The chakra is strictly indigenous, and it comes from nomadic subsistence practices. That's the way indigenous communities lived for many, many generations. It's a small plot of land very close to the house, which has a very high diversity of plants with many different types of uses. They're often food crops, but often medicinal plants. They could be crops with fibers for construction, crops for timber. That's the chakra. And it's a beautiful farming system. Often when you walk through one, you don't actually know that you're walking through a farm. And then on the other side, you have the world food system, which is really unsustainable, causing all these problems with deforestation. And to me, it was just like, okay, we need to connect these dots here. We've got a problem with poverty in these ecosystems. These people are farmers, and they have an ecologically sustainable farming system, and the world desperately needs a new way of doing agriculture. I think there's a real opportunity here, but there are barriers. Connecting those dots is not that easy. The chakra system is ecologically very sustainable. It's not that productive. So we support farming communities with regenerative agriculture practices and inputs to enrich the traditional chakra system. And what you see is if you nourish the soil with local organic inputs and fertilizers, suddenly you really are getting much better production. Plants are much more resistant to pests, and you get a farming system which is better adapted to aggregate and connect with markets.
And you work with both indigenous communities and local farmers. What's the biggest difference? Is there a difference?
It depends. Sometimes there is. Indigenous communities, to be honest, it can be easier to work collectively with indigenous communities. That's something that's just in their DNA. If you want to meet with the community, there's always a format to meet with the community. That's the assembly. They do it regularly. If you want to work with the community, there's a format. It's called the Minga. There are often collective work sessions, be that to weed around the football field, or whether it's to, you know, improve a road, or whether it's to, you know, whatever it's to do, there's a collective practice. Some say non-Indigenous communities, maybe there's a little bit more individualism. Getting people together to do something in a collective fashion can be a little bit more difficult. But there are many, say, non-Indigenous communities that have been living in rural areas for generations. And often then you see it's much easier then. We're connected to a Shwa community further in the south. And that's a mix. There's Quechua, there's Shwa, there's what you call campesinos who've arrived. And it's a very interesting intercultural mix.
What are your considerations for taking on a new project or to work with a community? Do you have specific criteria? Is there a minimum number of hectares, for instance?
No, we do not. When we're looking at a project and just sort of assessing it for potential for aliados to work there, back of the envelope criteria that we look for are firstly leadership. You know, is there someone or are there local people who just, you can see that they've got passion and commitment and really are looking to do good work, solve a problem in their community? That's probably the number one criteria. Because we work with value chains and bioeconomy, it helps if there's a business proposal that looks interesting. You know, we can just think about it. It's like, okay, that product is definitely, there's a growing market, or there's a market which is facing supply shortages. So we definitely take a look at that. We think about the market a little bit. So if it's like, okay, a very recent one is actually plantain. We're starting a new project with some Amazonian communities working with green plantain. And green plantain is not a very sexy product. It's not something that we would have gone for a while ago, but there's a really strong and growing market for green plantain. Green plantain grows really well in the chakra system. Indigenous communities know how to grow it. It grows fast, and post-harvest management is pretty simple. So it's like, okay, that feels good. I think we can do that. And we've actually just helped two communities in the Loreto province sell two batches. I don't know the exact amount, but I think it's 4,000 kilos of green plantain. And I think it can turn into a real sustainable revenue generator for local communities. And then the other consideration I always look for is like potential conservation impact. Communities that are in areas, often in buffer areas, close to reserves. That makes a lot of sense for us. Areas that are facing a lot of deforestation pressure. That's interesting for us. So that's basically it. Yeah, but and then certainly if there's a community, this is actually a good example. The Achuar in Ecuador, they have a huge territory. They have 800,000 hectares of land in Ecuador. It's very attractive, I think, often to donors and to partners, because any impact there can make a really big difference over a huge piece of land. At the same time, it's very difficult to set up a business there. So there's pros and cons.
Is it so remote?
It's so remote. If you want to get in, you've got to get in by plane, or there's a new solar river canoe system, which is amazing. But be prepared to take into consideration some serious logistical challenges.
I think that's the gap. That's why Aliados has been so successful, because you've grown quickly over the past few years. It's because that there's such a demand or need for your service, because it's not just support in the transition to regenerative agriculture, all types of support, but you address the whole value chain, the whole supply chain, like you said. So the demand side you take into account, which is very important. If people grow crops and they can't sell them, and then it's failed, doomed to fail.
Yeah, good point. Thinking about the market is kind of in our DNA. Even though we're a nonprofit, we were founded in 2009 as Runa Foundation in partnership with Runa LLC, which was a US and Ecuadorian company. And the goal there was to combine private capital, social business with philanthropic resources to set up a WAYUSA value chain. And since then, it's just abundantly clear you can't go and ask farmers to change the way they manage their land, introduce a new crop, if you're not very clear on how they're going to get that crop to market. So we've worked really hard over the last 4 years to develop a comprehensive system. You know, so it's like farm, regenerative agriculture. We were helping farmers have more profitable and productive farms that generate ecological services. We have a bioeconomy incubation program so that farmers are able to aggregate their products locally. If it's bananas, to wash them and prepare them for sale. If it's tea, to dry them. If it's cacao, to ferment it. If it's peanuts, to dry it. Local capacity to do at least that first stage of value add. So it's business capacity. And then, yes, we have a growing network of corporate partners that we then connect to these local businesses, work with them to negotiate hopefully stable purchase sale agreements, prices that make sense for both sides. And then we have a strong monitoring evaluation area, which we're calling creating ecological value to measure ecological benefits that come from regenerative agriculture, that come from improved land management, and see if we measure those precisely, can we incorporate them then into the business model? Because there's a lot of talk about, it's amazing. Businesses in the Amazon, they're so good for the forest. Clearly, this is the way forward, but it's not that easy. It's, you know, if you're reducing deforestation or if you're, you know, mitigating or if you're sequestering carbon or you're increasing biodiversity, it's not that easy to turn that into a business strength. So we're doing our best in that regard. But comprehensive, that's the key. You can't work in a really complex system like the Amazon with indigenous communities trying to set up a business and just focus on one element. You really have to be thinking about the whole ecosystem. We don't try to do everything, but there's several things we have to do really well. And then we also partner with conservation organizations to help with other aspects. And that's the network approach. It's complex and it's big and it's messy. So you need to have everybody at the table and you need to build a shared vision and then try to get everybody working in the best way they can towards doing their bit to achieve that vision.
I also like that you aim to, because you do a lot, like you said, but for instance, the offtake agreement will be between the buyer and the farmer directly, not with Aliados. You facilitate it, you find the buyers, you find the farmer, and then you're out, right?
That's our goal, definitely. We do not want to be buying and selling products. We're ecosystem builders. So we try to enable farmers, local businesses, and what we call anchor clients to be able to work together better in these value chains. Sometimes we have to lend a helping hand. Sometimes the buyer is only going to pay the farmer in 3 months' time. And it's like, okay, Aliados maybe needs to make a loan to make sure that the farmer gets paid cash in hand while we're setting up a new value chain. Because if the farmer doesn't get paid in hand, but get paid cash in hand, it's very unlikely they're going to continue producing that crop. And this is part of the innovation process. We have to make sure that the incentives are there so that farmers see a new viable pathway away from more destructive practices.
Right. And so this is maybe where the center comes in. Let's go back to the center. You said sometimes you make a loan to give the farmer cash in hand, and this would be one of the things the center aims to do. So it includes financial support.
With the center, which has a set of financing mechanisms, one of the financing arms is a rotating working capital fund. So members, if they're looking to access short-term capital and they have a purchase order from a client, there's a fund there that they can call on. And we don't need to get involved financially in that. But we would like that rotating fund to be managed by the members themselves. Because if one member benefits or gets money from the fund, there's less money for another member. So we would like for the members themselves to be assessing applications, possibly through a central committee. Like, yeah, this makes sense. These guys have a great product. They have a client. They've got a purchase order. They can pay back in 2 months, and then it's going to be available for the other members to use. Let's approve it. So we take a step back on that piece of financing from the center. The center does have two other financing pieces. One is grants, and I'm looking forward to seeing how others react to this. But the grants are going to be to pay for Aliados' technical services. Up until now, Aliados has arrived and we're here to help, and we can help you, you know, implement regenerative agriculture. We can help you buy an oven to dry your product. But like, why are we there? What's our interest? So we want to really increase the transparency in our work and negotiate agreements with communities that we're working with, saying, okay, we can help you with this and this and this, but it does have a cost. It's important to know that there's a cost. This is how much it's going to cost, but it's covered. The center is paying for this via grants. And then the second piece, if the enterprises, if businesses move forward and they need more money for things that Aliados, it's not our technical services, for instance, to buy an oven, or for instance, to increase their infrastructure capacity or to go to a trade fair, then they can access a refundable grant. And the refundable grant is, it's between $10,000 to $50,000. It's to pay for these business expenses, which are a priority, but which Aliados doesn't do. And then we will negotiate a profit sharing agreement with the member over 10 years. which if the business is successful, we'd like to share in the success of the business. If the business doesn't make a profit, well, that's fine. Like they don't have any economic risk. Then we write that off.
Yeah. You know, Wayne, this is something that's, I think, of increasing interest and relevance for Lookfar and our work. And it's this idea that you blend philanthropic support with investment and with, you know, commercial activities that still all share the same goal in terms of protecting biodiversity and making a region's, you know, local economy more sustainable. Grants can play an important role in that they can help de-risk certain, you know, investment type opportunities, not completely, but significantly. They also can, just even before investment comes in, they can create enabling conditions that can let businesses start up. These are all great to talk about conceptually. You're living it and doing it. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about some of the practical aspects of this and how smooth it is, where there are challenges, what you might like to see differently that you think could speed things along. Because, you know, it's time sensitive, but it's also relatively low dollar amounts. You're not talking about high six figure type grants. It can be 10,000 here, 50,000 there. And if deployed in a timely manner, can make the difference between whether a commercial venture gets going and then can start to sustain itself or not. But again, like, you know, this is all academic. You live it. Tell us more about how this is going and where you'd like to see it, how you'd like to see it evolve.
Yeah, sure. When we started thinking about the Aliados Center, what we knew was we wanted to combine, again, part of the comprehensive support system, technical assistance with finance. What we came to originally was going to be a loan fund. That was normally what you do, you know, loans. If you're talking about impact capital, it's loans and maybe grants. What we saw was that there is a lot of impact capital desperate to invest in the Amazon. A lot of folks are looking to put money into the Amazon with zero interest loans, with patient capital, with flexible capital. And there's a lot of businesses that need this money, but there's what they call this missing middle. There's a huge gap between what impact investors are looking or willing to finance and what rural indigenous communities need. So what you get is you get one or two businesses that make it, and they're the ones who get invested, and there's just no new smaller indigenous businesses coming through. So we realized we have to focus on our strengths, and our strengths really is high touch support, working hand in hand on the ground with indigenous communities to build capacity at the farm level, to build capacity at the local business level. And we'd like to then connect them to this growing pool of finance that's looking for businesses that are to some degree de-risked. I'm like, yeah, that's what we need to be doing. That's the need. And so we have this proposal, and it's to be fine-tuned, but it's grants, refundable grants, a rotating working capital fund. And we have a set of partner funds, partner impact funds, that we can then connect these businesses to when they're ready for impact funds. That's part of, you know, doing what you do well and bringing other partners to do the other stuff. So I don't really want to be at the moment setting up a loan fund, because there's a tension between what we want to do is we want to be business partners to these indigenous companies, you know, so we're going to be working with them, building capital. I don't also want to be their creditor. There's a tension for me there. You know, I want us to be all in, and we're providing support, and then connect them to other partners who can provide great loans. But I think we're onto something. It's tailored. It's, you know, after 20 years of working in this field and of working together as a team to design this, it's like, this is what we think. And it was validated last week. I was kind of nervous before the workshop because we've always been providing grants, and grants are, of course, received with open arms. Grants are fantastic, but we made it very clear that this is a principle change in approach. We don't want to be fostering dependency. We want to be enabling local leadership. And we want to share in the success of our work. And this is the way we think it can work. And people were like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah. And how do you feel the donors are viewing these kinds of opportunities? And what would your advice be in terms of, you know, what should be, what a donor should be looking for to do, what you think would help from Aliados' perspective, not just for its own work, but for everyone engaged in similar activities, for using philanthropic support to kind of kickstart and catalyze, you know, sustainable commercial activity?
Yeah, good question. My advice to donors is get curious about learning about new ways of investing. That to me is really important. I see a lot of new funds arriving to the Amazon and they've got a structure already. It's like, this is our minimum ticket size and it's patient capital and it's flexible. But I think these guys are already disqualifying themselves from getting into the weeds, maybe losing some money, but at least trying something new. You know, the Amazon really is not an urban city. Its impact investing, as the world knows it, for urban centers is really not the solution. I think there are some principles that are really important, but we have to find a new way of dispersing a blend of grants and investment capital. And to find those answers means experimenting. You know, so those, you know, donors who are, let's say, investment curious, they've also been giving a lot of grants. They've seen some of the grants work, but maybe a lot of the grants don't work, and they see these dependencies developing. If they're open to experiment, and a lot of them are, I think it's, I'm not saying they're not out there, but that to me is when the conversation gets really interesting. It's like, let's try something. I invite donors to be as close to the action as possible. I guess the other thing is, as a sort of executive director of a growing NGO, you get tired of writing funding proposals for projects. There's a tendency to embellish a little bit, you know, if you're writing for a project. It's like, I think donors who can get to a place where they can trust the organization and want to invest, you know, want to put money into an organization, in this case, I'd say Aliados, because, you know, they trust us and they think we're doing good work, and accompany us on a journey over 5 years. Don't be too picky about, you know, it's like writing a new project proposal every year. We want to be programmatic, you know, and we're working to promote social change. Social change takes many years. So it's building an institutional relationship between funder and executor.
What you've said is consistent with this recognition that funding organizations or ideas versus projects or programs is better over the long run, provided, you know, they're good organizations and they're good ideas, and where there's, you know, re-granting, as it were, which is kind of a loaded term. It's really more just being able to make field-based decisions about where resources are needed, when they're needed, and what are appropriate parameters. And so I think the model that you've developed is a good example of how, you know, giving kind of, you know, putting command and control in the field for the disbursement of small amounts of money where it can further a mission better than having to sit down and map out in a log frame, you know, over 5 years, decisions you're going to make, you know, in 2026 that probably aren't necessarily possible to outline and justify at this point, even though when we get there, they'll absolutely be so.
We're raising money from other NGOs or multilateral organizations, and then we're putting that money into essentially re-granting. And we also have to look for results. You know, what are the results that we're looking for as our donors are looking for results? And we're setting ourselves a challenge that sustainable community enterprise business is a way to help us build self-sustaining results.
It's the holy grail. It's what everybody is trying to figure out how to do. And so I think the long-term element of it is crucial. because you need to have the time to make mistakes, which are inevitable, in order to get to the solution ultimately. And that solution may also vary from region to region. So I was curious, you work in the Amazon, but also in the Chocó and also in the high Andes and all across Ecuador. Are there different approaches to different regions?
From Aliados, we are trying to consolidate our approach with all the communities we're working with. That's not to say that it's a cookie cutter solution. We have these four components: agriculture, bioeconomy, incubation, connection to markets, and creating ecological value. And then depending on the context and the community, you sit down and we start with a participatory diagnostic where it's like, okay, let's see what's going on here. What are your needs? What is our capacity to help you? And then work plans are created according to that framework. You know, it's these four work areas where we can help. Part of this new approach that we're moving into is each community business then they position themselves in a phase of business development, either proof of concept, pilot, full production, or acceleration, which also helps us to identify, okay, what exactly, you know, are your needs? And then we design together. We put together a work plan. We really are co-creating. So we make it clear what Aliada is going to be helping with, what local communities are going to be doing. And then we budget. And it's a lot about building human relationships. You have to be very clear, at least what we're doing, you have to be close to the ground. We have a very strong field presence. We hire local promoters in each community we're working with.
That makes it so hard to scale up easily, right? Because that's your model. You have a model by design, very tailor-made and very local.
I was thinking a lot about scale. I was feeling less sure about scale last year. I think working with individual communities the way we've been doing is a difficult model to scale. It requires a lot of man hours. You require a really large field presence. But with the center, I think there's much greater capacity to scale because we can have a really highly qualified team of agronomists, of food processing and hygiene, food hygiene specialists, foresters, M&E experts, project management experts. And if you can work with a cross-section of actors, 10 to 15 organizations over 200,000 hectares, then there's exponential results from bringing those actors together, and we're working together in collective spaces. I think we can achieve a whole lot more quickly. But someone has to be doing it. Like, this is, you know, this is why, I mean, I've been doing this now for 20 years, and someone has to be enabling, you know, creating enabling conditions for local communities to improve economic livelihoods and conserve the forest. As you say, it's the Holy Grail. And unless we have conditions on the ground, which, you know, allow for, you know, sustainable community development, and unless it's there, it's just not going to happen. You know, all the conversation at higher levels about mobilizing, you know, billions of dollars to conserve billions of hectares is great, but if you don't have the conditions on the ground, it's going to be a bad investment.
Yeah, indeed. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the business aspect. The buyers you seek, are they buyers outside of Ecuador, or do you tend to prefer domestic buyers? And is it purely wholesale, or do you see an opportunity for direct-to-consumer sales?
At the moment, most of the buyers are domestic, but they are exporting. There's a big debate about whether indigenous businesses should be producing, you know, branded products for sale on shelves, you know, direct to customer, or whether they should be producing maybe less sexy products, maybe high quality fermented cocoa beans for sale to business, a B2B model. I think at least to start, I think the B2B model makes more sense. That's where the competitive advantage is for Indigenous businesses starting off. That's the space to start, I think, because you can also move volumes that way. I think what we want to see is we want to see farmers with more income in their pockets on a consistent basis. So because they, in the end, are the ones who have to conserve the forest. We need to see families with more money in their pockets from sustainable farming practices. And that makes it a little bit easier. They can be successful businesses there. And of course, you can have a product, you can brand it, but it can have a logo, you can get it to your strategic partners, you can use it for events, you can take it to fairs, it can be as gifts. And I think it builds community identity and pride. But for the business plan, you have to think, you know, it's like what's going to really generate enough business and enough money to pay my fixed costs and to buy high volumes of product from farmers.
This combination of bringing the business into conservation is so needed. It needs to be a mix. You can't just do one or the other, right? That's what we're trying to figure out.
As much as the world is a little bit anti-business at the moment, the truth is like the social business can be really powerful.
Yeah.
So that's our focus. It's a new way of doing business. The world needs it.
Yeah.
So let's see what we can do.
I think that, and I can understand why at a political level, these kinds of distinctions can get lost. When you look at like 30 by 30, that makes a certain amount of sense in terms of how to communicate simply and effectively that a lot more is needed than what's currently happening. And that this requires action and investment at all levels in government and the private sector and so forth. But when you get a little bit deeper, the idea that protecting biodiversity is just about setting land aside, I think misses the point. Yes, it's important, and there are plenty of areas that are worth setting aside. But added all that up, and you still have a whole lot more where biodiversity is bountiful and shouldn't be neglected or ignored. And also, over time, preserving the integrity of protected areas depends on a buffer zone around it, stretching as far as possible, in which, businesses and just the ordinary throes of everyday life all share the same sort of core values of, living sustainably, protecting biodiversity is important. So it's not purely exploitative and extractive, even though there are economically beneficial things happening. It's almost like we need an entirely new term to describe this amalgam of activities that I think are really extremely well exemplified and in a very inspiring way in Aliados's work.
Thank you very much. But there's another way of looking at it as well, that the business is housed within a community, and the community is housed within the forest. So it's kind of the triangle sort of flipped into a circle format. And I think as long as we have these two different ways of looking at things and make sure that we're not forgetting one or the other, it's not the business just has to be strong. It does have to be strong. But you have to remember that the business is housed within a community, and that community is housed within the forest. Those two frameworks were enlightening for me.
And it is also, I think it's important to understand that it requires a different skill set. Conservation or business or conservation or NGO people, it's a different mindset if you want to have a successful business. You have to be a different type of person. And it's both needed. Like you said.
Yes, absolutely. I arrived to the NGO world, as a lot of people arrived to the NGO world, with like, I was really, frustrated about climate change, and I really wanted to do good and I wanted to help. And that in many cases is enough. And then you end up in a project and you're doing things and you're working on very complex issues. But if you want to be responsible to the community partners, you very quickly need to make sure that you're not learning at their cost. And that happens a lot. You know, so we focused a lot over the last few years at Aliados on bringing in more diverse skilled staff onto the team. We've realized that this is only going to work if local people are leading these initiatives at some point in the future. Like, that's a given. And it's not that easy to achieve. So you have to be working on leadership, and you have to be, you know, strengthening local agency, and that's complex. So make sure you have the right people on the team to do that.
Right. And Wayne, along these lines, earlier you defined Aliados to be ecosystem builders. You use this interesting expression, and I was wondering, in terms of skill sets, but also in terms of who's the team behind Aliados, can you tell a little bit more about, you know, the use of this expression and what does that mean?
Yeah, sure. So I think ecosystem builders is particularly a term which is useful where there's market failures. You know, if the markets were working really well, then that's great. You have strong institutions, you have a legal system, you have, you know, actors can interact in a reliable way. Where markets are not working very well, as they are not working very well in the Amazon, then if you want to try to improve that system, then there's a set of conditions which need to be built. And the way we see it for our mission is to build sustainable community businesses. You need to help farmers to have more productive, more profitable farms. You need to help local businesses have access to capacity and finance to build viable businesses. You need better market interlinkages, and you need better data generation and management. There's also information is very poor. So those are the four pieces that we look at. Those are the four four spaces where we think we can strengthen the ecosystem.
What you describe and the role Aliados is able to play in the communities in which you work is one that some might expect could be fulfilled by government. Is this something that government could evolve to do in part, still in complement with Aliados? Or do you feel like government's role maybe is best elsewhere? And in fact, it's civil society groups like Aliados that are needed to bridge all these gaps and propel these communities forward in a more sustainable way?
It depends. In an ideal world, government is doing what we're doing. And actually, an author who has influenced me quite a lot, Mariana Mazzucato, has written a lot on the role of government in innovation and some of the breakthrough innovations of our age. The US government, particularly with the internet, with getting to space, that was government money. So ideally, yes, it would be great if the government is investing in innovation to overcome market failure, to increase public welfare. But I think to start with, especially in a very complex system like rural Amazon, I think it makes more sense for a government to adopt a functioning solution and take that to scale.
I liked how you put it, investment in innovation by government, because I was thinking about it more in like ag extension programs. By contrast, an investment in innovation is a very different role that the governments play. It's a very different kind of feel to it. There's a very different policy rationale, but it might actually be better suited to think about these kinds of actions, whether the money is coming from a public coffer or from a private foundation or whatever, that these are investments in innovation and not simply just the provision of services. That's a cool way to think about it that I hadn't really thought of before. So
the Ecuadorian government invests money in agricultural extension. The Ministry of Environment and the Ministry of Agriculture is consistently in the field handing out new varieties of cocoa or coffee or providing training on, you know, new crops that are interesting to the market. It's just not sufficient. What you get is This is why it's like you've got to be thinking about a more complex system. And yes, it is innovation.
Is the government then also promoting regenerative practices or very much the traditional ways?
I mean, that's interesting. Yesterday, one of our board members, Stephen Sherwood, was off to a meeting in Cotopaxi province here. That's a very important producer of vegetables. And they're aiming for an agroecological future. Local government there is, I mean, it's one thing, you know, it's easy to say, but there is interest. And I think everybody just needs to be playing the role they need to be playing in the best possible way. I think governments either underestimate the complexity and arrive with cocoa seeds and are giving them to farmers and hope that's going to turn into benefits, or maybe there's overreach, you know, trying to do a little bit more than they need to be doing. And then you're not empowering local people. I think big NGOs also, you know, what they call the bingos, could also have that capacity. Maybe they're a little bit clunky, maybe, you know, one step away from work off the ground, but that's part of what we'll be looking at from here on out. I think we've built really strong relationships with community partners. We know that it works on the ground. And now it's like, okay, so who do we connect with further upstream? And we have some amazing funder partners who believe in our work, and they're a clear part of the solution. But I think in terms of taking it to scale, connecting with government or, you know, multilateral organizations who, yeah, are willing to invest some time and money over the next 5 to 10 years.
Can you give us a bit of an overview on how these regenerative practices are allies of nature conservation? Do you have any examples to tell us about?
Yeah, so a very concrete one, because we're focused on the farm and the enterprise level. But with many of these communities, there's much more forest outside the farm. So our theory of change basically is, you know, a lot of these communities are struggling with economic poverty. You've got to address that first. You need to help them make a better, more dignified living from their farm. And once you have farmers with a slightly more stable incomes, then you've created the conditions for communities to recommit or rethink about how they conserve their territories. Because right now there's a lot of pressure on a lot of indigenous communities who are connected to the market-based economy. There's a lot of fragmentation. So with the Chachi are like pretty much all indigenous communities I've ever, you know, connected with. They have an inherent desire to conserve their forests, but sometimes the conditions are not great. So if we can make their farms more productive, more profitable, there's a great opportunity to then have a discussion about our territories. So the Chachi have already made a very clear commitment. They want to conserve 2,000 hectares of their forest. That's nearly half of their territory, this community. And so we're working at that level now with partners. So it's, you work at the farm level, you work at the business level, and you work at the territorial level. And I think that's the way to do it. Instead of arriving to an indigenous community and be like, hey, like, what can we do to help you conserve your forest? Like, they probably have more pressing needs. And once those are addressed, then you can talk about, you know, people conserving collective territories.
Terrific. Well, Wayne, listen, this has been an absolutely incredible discussion. I hope you'll come back maybe next year, and we could do another round of this to see what's been happening and build on this discussion.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Wayne, thank you. Marlies Lucia, thanks as always for joining. And we will be back soon with more great, great stuff from Los Aliados, I'm sure.
LookFar is a U.S. 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to defending wild and wondrous places and working with the people living in and among them. More at lookfar.org.